in two locations, 222 Blunt Road and 7305 Harry Drive, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Thank you for your prayers and support of the ministry. Let us now join the broadcast already in progress.
Hope for all I
to praise this morning. Change is coming for just a moment there. If you don't mind, I just want to get a little bit of that out of me. I don't know if you know it, but if you just keep looking in the mirror, you'll see a change coming. Listen, yesterday a man said to me, he said, John, how can you smile when your world is crumbling down? I said, here's my secret. When I want to cry, I take a look around and I see that I'm getting by. Then I hold on. Change is coming. Hold on. Don't you worry. Hold on. You can make it. Hold on. Everything. Some people like to worry. Some people like to hide. Some people like to run away from the pain inside. Well, it's your business. Do whatever you want to do. But if it don't work out, listen, here's what you ought to do. Now just hold on.
Hold on.
Change is coming.
Change is coming.
Hold on. Give God some praise if you're going to do that. Amen, amen. From the book of Proverbs, chapter 23 and verse 25, it says, thy father and thy mother shall be glad, and she that bore you shall rejoice. May the Lord add a blessing to the reading of his holy word. And she that bare you shall rejoice. Proverbs 23 and 25. Now this comes from the wisest man who walked on planet earth, Solomon. Proverbs gives us an insight to some of the greatest wisdom that God has given to an individual. And Solomon was one who pleased God because his desire was to know God in his heart, in his inward parts. He wanted to know God so well that he put money and fame and longevity and power and all of those things that men seek after on the back burner, and put the desire to know God's heart on the front burners. And God was so impressed and pleased with Solomon that he gave him wisdom like no other earthly man had ever received before him or after him. Jesus Christ was the only one who walked on planet earth who had more wisdom than Solomon. That's how greatly God favored him for desiring to know God in the inward parts. Now, this is a man who also has experienced blessings on levels we could not even fathom, levels that we could not even connect with, levels that would not even make any sense to us. He's so blessed that even his servants are blessed than most folk who are blessed in today's times. His servants had servants. He lived in such wealth and such honor and such glory that folk came from miles, hundreds and thousands of miles to come and to sit at his feet and to hear the richness of his words, the wisdom that poured from his lips because God had favored him so. And he talks about and he shares and he desires that all men would know this kind of wisdom from God. We think about wisdom, and yet we don't understand the practical role of wisdom in our lives. So many of us would be in such different places if we honestly understood the power of wisdom. Now he's talking to, if you back up to the 22nd verse and come on down to the 25th verse, you'll understand that he's dealing with wisdom about and concerning the children. And these verses really make up the attitude of wisdom and righteousness for every individual, especially every child in training by godly parents. The wisdom is the most principled value that man himself can ingratiate himself to God, because when he seeks God for God's wisdom is the highest wisdom one can know, and that pleases God. When you want to get close to God, then you need to be able to talk God's talk. You know, there is a difference between worldly wisdom and godly wisdom. And this man has godly wisdom, which means he's connected to glory, and yet the wisdom of God is greater than the wisdom of this world. So he has the best of both worlds, and he's teaching fathers and mothers how to instruct their children, how to instill goodness and grace and wisdom and knowledge and understanding in their children. Listen, one of the mistakes we make now is we wait too late to start teaching our children wisdom. We wait till they're filled with all of the foolishness of the world. And then we've got to do like Proverbs 29 and 15. We got to take a rod and beat wisdom in them. You know, and we wouldn't have to do that if we would do the right thing first. So when you get some time, look at Proverbs, the 23rd chapter, verse 22 on down to 25. But let me get back for my text's sake. First of all, he says, thy father and thy mother shall be glad. Glad. Now, he says this upon the heels of what he has already said in verse 24, 23, and 22. So you need to back up and study those and see when he comes down and makes this statement that a father and a mother shall be glad. There is a reason why they shall be glad. Let me just throw this out parenthetically. Do you think every father and mother is glad because of their children? Come on, be honest with me now. My mother's here today, and I'm so grateful to God. I am grateful and thankful for her. And coming up, my mother had, you know, a way of just keeping it real. And when we would get, you know, on my mother's last nerve, she would say, I got the worst children in the world. Some of my siblings are here. They can bear witness to that. And the moment we recognize we have gotten on her last nerve and straighten up and fly right and do it, she turns right around and says, I got the best children in the world. She wouldn't sugarcoat it. When we weren't right, she didn't let us slide and get away with stuff like that. She knew we knew better because she had trained us better. And when we would not act the way that we were supposed to act, it didn't end with doing what you want to do and having your own way. She made it clear she loved us too much to let us have our own way. And as a result of that, at the end of life, at this part and stage of life, she can be glad about what she has given. She can be glad about what she has sacrificed. She can be glad about what she's instilled, because all of the efforts that were given because of her faithfulness to the gifts God had given her in the way of her children were used faithfully. Children are something else. Young, sit and act holier than thou if you want. You go through something with children. And some of the best children in the world, listen, didn't always act that way. Some of the best parents in the world got some of the worst children. Some of the best parents who have given and done and shared all that they could have gone through hell and back with some of their children. Listen, it doesn't always mean, my brothers and sisters, that they're going to be perfect always. Because when you teach a child, when you train a child, you've got to give them an opportunity to live those things out. Now, here's what you need to know. Don't think you're the only one in their ears. There are influences from television, from radio and music, from videos, from friends, from the world, from all other input sources. But you have the benefit because you not only have their ear, but you have their heart. And listen at this, when they don't get it with their ear and they don't get it with their heart, you still got your hand. And what you've got to realize, again, as I've said so often time, there is a line that must not be crossed. I don't care how much you love your children, how much you communicate with your children, you keep it clear. I'm the parent, you are the child. I don't care if I look young enough to be your sister, I'm your mama. I don't care if I look young enough to be your brother, I'm your daddy. Don't let the lines get crossed. Make it clear to them and their friends that you are the parent. And when you treat them and train them and teach them how to do this, you will be glad. In the end, the efforts are fruitful. And mama and daddy, for both of their contributions, will be glad. That's so important, because one of the things I want you to understand is there is a new term now that's used more than it was used in my coming up years, I've heard. When a husband and wife conceive, now they say, we are pregnant. That gives the husband buy-in. He's already responsible for, but he doesn't always have buy-in the process. So they have coined this phrase that we are pregnant, because of course it took two to make it. And it's going to take two to bring the fullness of what that child deserves and what that child needs. To have a full balance. Whenever one party is missing, the one party that remains has to pull double duty. And that means there's a double drain on them because they have got to try and create a balance for both sides when it's only one side. And so one of the things, again, they're trying to get men to recognize is you are more than a donor. Can I get a piece of witness? We made it. We take care. We rear it. We train it. We do that. A mother and a daughter walking down a little country street, downtown street, and her mother had not seen her good friend in many years, but she knew that she had always wanted to have a family. And she and her husband were coming down the street. The husband was eating an ice cream cone, and he had her his arms around her neck, and they're walking down the street, and she spots her friend, and she says, guess what? She said, we are pregnant. And so she said, the friend says, well, how far along are you? And the woman said, I'm 5.5 months pregnant. And the little girl tugged on her mama's skirt and said, mama, how far along is he? His belly was bigger than her belly. I guess in that sense they were both pregnant, I'm not sure, but the phrase we are pregnant means that we have buy-in together. In the Eastern cultures, the roles were very clear of the father and the husband and the mother and the wife. And their roles, again, were so clear that they did not cross those roles, and yet they gave delicate balance to the children. So now, notice it moves on, and Solomon moves from they shall be glad to, and she that bore you shall rejoice. Now, first of all, when it says she that bore you, of course, he's referring to your mother. And he's referring to the one who made the choice to follow through with your birth.
That's right.
Now, I need you to know that it is a gift from God to be able to bring forth
That's
children.
Right. That's right. Amen, amen.
It's a gift from God. And so, When that mother experiences that, it is something that happens in her that is so profound, so deep, that it literally changes her world. And so one of the things, again, is that her body, anatomically, biologically, physiologically, psychologically, and even emotionally begins to change. Little changes. When she wakes up with morning sickness, it's because her body is preparing a space and place for a new life growing on the inside of her. Her body stretches to accommodate that new little person that's living on the inside of her. Everything now that she eats and drinks and does is not just for herself, but she's living for two. And that means she's constantly conscious of that baby on the inside of her, growing daily, changing her. Because I need you to know, when a woman gets pregnant, there are a minimum of three great changes that happen to her. The first one is her attitude.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
And some of y'all kind of laughing. But there is a change in her attitude. Why? Because she realized she is living for two now. There are things she used to do, she don't do no more. There are things and places she used to go, she don't go no more. There are activities she participate in, she put those to the side. Anything that would bring harm to that child, her attitude has adjusted to say, this child is more important than my fun. This child is more important than the life I used to lead. And she makes sure it's important. And many times, listen, the life she enjoyed before, she makes changes daily that no longer resemble that life now. Not only does she make great changes in her attitude, but she makes great changes in her appearance. Yeah, I mean, you know, things start swelling and stretching and growing and, you know, it changes the dynamics and it changes the shapes and all the rest of that. And once she might have been, you know, a brick house, and, you know, she started expanding for all of the storage she's got. Problem is, sometimes she can never get back to where she was before. She deals with all of that psychologically. Sometimes things stretch out of place, can't go back the way they used to be. She's got to deal with all of that emotionally. Thirdly, her appetite changes. That thing she craved when she's pregnant, she ain't never craved before, because that baby has input and interest in what she eats and how she eats and what time she eats. And even if she don't even feel like eating, she's got to recognize, I got to take care of this child. And so finally, she gives birth. She brings forth. She bears this child. She does it. Not him. Her. He could be right there. Brother Curtis said it best. Say, we can't feel your pain. We know you're in pain. We know your stress and your issues you go through. We may not be able to feel it, but we know you're going through it. And can I tell you, there are just some pains you can't assimilate. You can't even begin to understand the magnitude of the pain and the suffering. It's not just labor as in the time of delivering. That's labor, birth labor. But then you've got life labor that happens once the baby gets here. And so when she brings forth that baby, out of all the joy that she's known before, nothing compares with that baby being brought forth out of her body that she's labored with for all of those months. And all the pain and all of the sleepless nights and all of the suffering and all of that, she gladly forgets about for the joy of that baby. But they both rejoice then, or are glad then. But she got to keep on going. She's still connected. All of the firsts that she experiences that daddy don't get to see. One, because he's working or providing. One, because he has other responsibilities that are outside of the house that may not allow him to see what's going on and be there in the house to train that child. So as a result of that, he missed a lot of firsts. Like the time when she's getting to learn that baby's schedule. And she go to change the baby, and the baby say, well, you caught me at the wrong time. And he continues on doing what he's doing. Either spring or solid waste just keep coming. Daddy most time never experienced that, because she gets him trained by the time daddy decides to change a diaper or so. When the baby takes its first steps, all of these things she's connected intimately with. She brings forth the child, but then she rears that child with a lot of living labor. living labor. She's there for their child's hurts, their scrapes, their bruises, their life's experiences that most fathers don't know anything about. By the time father gets home from work, she's handled the situation, put that situation at ease, and dealt with that child's hurt, pain, situation, setbacks, whatever, by herself. And no wonder when the child grows up and he's a big burly man running on the field, caught a football, and he throws his finger out, "Mom, number one." You know, "All right, Mom," gives her the big ups on television, makes a whole big thing. It's Mom, Mom, Mom. Not that they don't love Dad, but she's so invested in far more ways many times than father can be invested. But listen, even when this happens and they move into productive lifestyles, it is the joy in knowing once they are out on their own doing well, that the mother rejoices. She rejoices at the bringing forth. She rejoices at the bringing up. But lastly, she rejoices in the bringing fruit. And fruit that remains. Listen to this. It's the fruit of her labor that makes that child what that child ought to be.
That's right, Doc.
And when he grows up and he is a success and he is one who's productive and he is one who's respectful and he's one who has been blessed in various areas of life, and the end result is it comes back from everything that has been invested in him. And it's at that time that that child is supposed to begin returning the fruit to mama and daddy. Let me throw this out and I'm closing. You never, ever, ever get to the point where you are beyond blessing mama and daddy. When you get to the point where you're productive, where you're successful, you are then supposed to reach back and begin blessing your parents. Not that they need it, not that they ask for it, not that they even want it. But the first commandment with promise is treating your mother and your father right.
That's right, that's right.
That your days may be long upon the earth. You may not know all that they have done, sacrificed, given, because we're so desensitized. But if we ever get tapped in to the real sacrifice and love of a true mother who's given so much, there's nothing you have that's too good for mama. Nothing. Nothing. Because I've got news for you, my brothers and sisters. Even though you're grown and you're out on your own, if you ever need mother, all you got to do is pick up the phone. And if she's still on this side of glory, she'll make her way to you. No matter what your condition is, no matter what your situation is, no matter where you are, how far you may have fallen down, mama will be there for you. And she, listen at this, she shall rejoice. The word rejoice means literally that she has had joy before and now she has joy again. She rejoices or rejoices, which means that she rejoiced or was glad and had joy when you were born. And now that you're all grown up and you have started to walk in the ways of the word and the ways that God would have you to, she can rejoice again that she has done the job that God has given her to do. A and you are somebody that she can be proud of. Daddies are proud of their sons and their daughters, but differently from mama.